Hi and welcome to Matrix Moments. This is Saloni and today we're talking about the state of the Indian venture market in 2019 and where do we go from here. This episode will feature Tarun Davda, Managing Director at Matrix Partners India, and guest speakers Miten Sampath and Samidha Sharma. Miten is VP Corporate Development at Times Internet, which is the Times Group's digital arm. He leads the investments, acquisitions, and strategic partnerships at Times Internet, and his portfolio includes companies such as Delivery, Byju's, Uber, Airbnb, Myra, and Shuttle, to name a few. In addition, Miten is also an angel investor. This episode will be moderated by Samidha Sharma, Emerging Business Editor at Economic Times. Samidha's expertise spans across startup, tech, entrepreneurship, and the Indian VC ecosystem. She actively covers and tweets about this space and has been doing so since 2012.
Thanks, Saloni. Hello, gentlemen. Finally, we've been able to come together. It's quite a feat and this should be fun. So we're going to talk about the India venture opportunity today with Tarun and Miten. Guys, I mean, we speak all the time off the record, etc. But this is slightly a different setting. Let's jump in. I'm going to talk a little about what's happening in the ecosystem right now. So there's obviously return of Tiger with Scott announcing a bunch of deals. There is Sequoia, which launched its surge program. Its last 6 to 8 months have been a lot of activity in the early stage ecosystem. Tell me, Tarun, if you want to jump in, how is this different from 2015, early parts of 16 in terms of deal activity?
Firstly, let me start by thanking you, both Samidha and Miten. Thank you for doing this.
Oh, and just a quick disclaimer. Both Miten and I have been approached completely independently, so there is no Times Group attachment here. Sorry, Tarun, you can go on.
Yeah, so thank you for doing this. I think it's a very, very exciting time. Your question was, how is 2015 different from what's happening today? I think it's different in a few respects. In my mind, firstly, if I look at the market depth for a lot of us who've been doing this now for a few years, the market depth has never been clearer. That's a big positive. I think if I look at the quality of ideas, I do feel a lot of the ideas that we used to see 2, 3, 4 years ago tended to be sort of me too's or copycats of things that, you know, had worked elsewhere. I think it's not completely changed, but we're seeing definitely a larger proportion of ideas that are more unique towards solving India problems. That's very exciting as an investor. For a firm that, you know, we focus a lot on backing sort of outstanding founders, I would say founder quality is significantly higher. And I've said this in a few places. If I look back at what made the valley, if I look back at what made China, China, a lot of it was people who have been part of successful companies, seen them being built at very close quarters, have been part of those journeys, maybe not as a founder, but as a part of the sort of key exec team. Same thing happened in China with ex-Alibaba, ex-Tencent, ex-Baidu guys building some of the largest companies. A large part of the founding teams that we see today have some elements of that. And that's very exciting as an early stage VC.
Miten?
Yeah, just to add to that, thanks for having me, Tarun and Samidha. Look, I think it's echo most of what Tarun said. I think it's a very exciting time to be in India. I would rather be in this market than any other market. Let me even say that, right? It's more exciting.
And you had the choice.
And I've had the choice to be in different geographies. So I think India is a super exciting market. I think the depth is now finally visible. We're seeing this in a lot of our operating businesses and also in our investments. I think the depth of the Indian consumer market is massive. And it's always been one of those things which is, it's about to come, it's about to come, it's about to come. That's the story we've all told, international people looking inwards. I think all of that's starting to happen. I also think the quality of teams and the kinds of problem statements we're seeing is fundamentally different than what it was maybe 2 or 3 years ago. And so very bullish on the sector overall, very bullish on a number of new ideas that are coming up. And I think, of course, there will be a little bit of over-enthusiasm. There will be some crash and burn. There will be some excessive investments. But I think net-net out of all this will come, you know, some repeatable infrastructure, some sort of, you know, infrastructure that gets built that can be, you know, leveraged over time. So I don't worry at all about the excesses because I think ultimately they yield some value.
So, you know, I'm just going to stay on with Tiger. What happened the last time around when, you know, Lee Fixel was at the helm was a complete, you know, turnaround in terms of valuations. And in some way, a lot of VCs thought that, you know, those became too excessive and very boosterish too early. Do you think it's a good signal to have someone like Tiger sort of come back? And obviously the focus is slightly different this time around. It's more B2B and SaaS and cross-border. But what does it do when an investor like Tiger comes and does, I don't know if I want to call it spray and pray, but it is, you know, 200 odd million in a span of 6 months. What does it do to investors, you know, who come in early on? I mean, they don't do this kind of, you know, sort of rampant. They are more consistent, right? So, and India's always been plagued by that. You have a SoftBank which sort of comes in. You have a Tiger. There was a time when DST came in. And how does it sort of distort the market?
So let me start, and I'd love Miten to add. I think it's, you know, you mentioned about Tiger. My sense is it's a net positive, especially for investors like us that come in significantly early at seed and series A. Generally, the companies that we fund tend to be feeders to the ones that that they look at. Not always, but most of the times. I think companies that are in need of capital, you know, somebody like a Tiger coming in with a lot of high conviction. Tiger's known to be an investment, like a fund that tends to back their companies for the long term. To me, that's a big positive. In terms of focus, B2B, B2C, my sense is I think the opportunity is there everywhere. We continue to see a lot of opportunities in B2C. Tiger obviously has chosen to do more B2B thus far. At least I haven't read somewhere where they say they won't do B2C. Maybe that they've just not found stuff that they have liked so far, right? In terms of, you know, check sizes, you know, valuations, honestly, it is very relative in my view. And I'll tell you what I mean, right? For a company, for a fund that is as large as a Tiger or SoftBank, for them to come in and give a slightly higher entry valuation, they understand that that's not the last check that they're going to be writing. And they have significantly longer horizons that they make some of these investments with. And so when they're coming in, they're looking at this as, hey, this is a step in the door for me to get in some ownership. As the company scales, I will get opportunities to put in more capital and basically get to my blended ownership, right? Whatever that number may be. I think that's a good thing and a bad thing. The good thing is initially, like you said, there's a lot of euphoria.
Let's focus on the bad things because
like Miten said earlier, is there more enthusiasm in some cases? Yes, there will always be. There's going to be more euphoria. There will be not every story is going to play out to perfection. And the ones that don't, I think they risk, and it's a conscious call founders take. There is a risk of overcapitalization. I think companies that today should be raising X sometimes are raising 2X, 3X, 4X. Yeah. They need to find, and that obviously as a result, valuations have gone up.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these valuations today aren't necessarily justifiably bottoms up. So if things go well, it's great. Things don't always go well. Almost always, things go sideways for some time. And, you know, founders will need to navigate that. They need to take the good with the bad. And so if there are cases where, and by the way, you know, we talk about Tiger as being, you know, one of the smartest investors. The reality is they've been very measured in taking repeated bets in companies. So, for example, there's an example of Flipkart,
yeah,
where they went all in. They put in multiple sort of rounds where they put in a lot of capital and had a great exit as a result at the end of it.
Yeah, but
they've been very measured
in
several other bets that they've made where they have not doubled up.
Yeah.
Right? And honestly, then, you know, in their mind, the founder had a shot to prove something out. Things didn't work out, you know. That's it. They move on to the next investment. Mm-hmm. And so I think every founder needs to sort of recognize and then decide for themselves what is the right financing strategy for them. Because mm-hmm. it may not work for everybody.
Miten, you want to talk a bit about, you know, you're obviously not a pure play VC. You're more of a corporate VC. So there are a lot of companies which are incubated. You also do investment. So, you know, You do multiple sorts of investments. I mean, how do you see a SoftBank or a Tiger in the chain of, you know, things here?
Yeah, so look, I'll answer the first question first and then I'll come to the second part as a strategic investor. How do we look at it? I think Tiger benefits from a global perspective on a daily basis that a lot of us that are just in this market don't have and don't have the luxury of either the mandate or the focus. So what happens is, I think when they look at it at a global level, they are able to pick macro patterns in different markets at different points in time. So I think the first time when they came around and put a lot of capital, they saw that, look, the B2C market might now take off and let's go back maybe one or two big ideas, right? And that's where they picked very large ideas. If you look at most of the kind of companies they picked, they picked companies that could become multi-billion dollar revenue opportunities if the market played out, right? And I think what they're seeing now is, and obviously it's my conjecture, but I think what they're seeing now is that India can now be the sort of backdrop for global software companies to be built out of here for a couple of reasons. One is we have the talent pool to build software. Unlike China, China has a hardware, China has AI, China has other stuff, but India does basic software very well, and it can sort of, you know, build an almost as good as Salesforce company out of India, right? Because the software engineering there and the innovation there is not sort of very complicated. You're just replicating stuff and just building it well. Secondly, Indian companies are also trusted. Indian software companies are a lot more trusted than Chinese companies. You all know the whole trade war. You all know the big picture about, you know, of IP ownership and things like that. So again, think about the large outsourcing industry. A lot of the data flowing in from the rest of the world comes to India. India is trusted as a place where these things will happen. So I think these are some big trends that Tiger's probably looking at, which we as local market operators don't have the, you know, sometimes don't have the perspective to do. And now you can say this is Tiger's leadership or a lack of creativity from people like us, but it's, you know, I think the fact is that I think that's what they've identified now at a macro level. This is where the opportunity is. Also, B2C has become very competitive. You have all the big players in India now. Alibaba is competing. You know, you've got SoftBank with its capital. You've got Amazon. You've got Tencent. You've got us. You've got Jio. You've got so much competition in B2C. So the platform that have gotten some scale, they have some inherent advantages that a new startup will not have. And so I think it's probably, you know, combination of these factors that's playing on Tiger's strategy. I don't think it changes anything for us, frankly, because, you know, it's one of various investors who look at the market. And I think on a company-by-company basis, when you look at an opportunity, you have to convince any investor who will sort of buy into that vision, and then you sort of, you know, go from there. So Tiger may, you know, is Tiger not going to do B2C deals? I don't think so. I think it depends on the opportunity, right? So I think we're trying to read too much into what they've done in the last 6 months. I don't think, you know, it's sort of a long-term trend.
But isn't that happening, Tarun? I mean, SoftBank, the last time I met Rajiv Mishra, he very expressly said that they want to increasingly do in India 100 million sort of investments in companies which are valued at less than about 500 million. Is it a reflection of what the market is? Because coming in so late for a SoftBank, I don't know if necessarily they are seeing, you know, those kind of returns coming in.
I think it's a combination of two things. One is there's only a handful of opportunities which are $1 billion plus, and where there is a clear line of sight to that becoming multiple billions of dollars, right? For even somebody entering at that stage, assuming some dilution along the way, if for them to get a, you know, 3x, 4x return on that kind of check, the reality is you're looking at that company being at least $10, $12 billion. There's not as many opportunities that are clear, right? Number one. Number two, I do believe that I think with especially now with more of a local team in place, the view is that should we be entering sooner because there's significantly much more value creation that we can be part of. And there is a lack of, you know, even 100 million check writers. The reality is there's not like a dozen check writers already at that stage. Mm-hmm. And so there is almost a, you know, sort of a phase where either you're too early for them, and then by the time, you know, maybe somebody else goes and, you know, raises capital. So even entrepreneurs prefer to get them in early because it does definitely give line
but
of sight.
But what happens to the damage which has been done, I would say, between 2014 and till about a year ago, when they actually pumped a bunch of money in companies which have not really grown? And I mean that you can list them out, right? Would they become multiple $1 billion outcomes? I don't think so. And I mean, it's not only the SoftBank companies, but I'm saying if you look at the larger ecosystem, and Tarun and Mithin, you both can come in. I think when I take a step back, I'm looking at the and these are conversations we've had so many times. Sure. You look at the revenue, you look at the amount raised, you look at the losses. Those businesses are just not growing enough for anyone to make those kind of returns. So, I mean, what is the big picture then?
It's the underlying issue with India's, you know, GDP per capita, right? I mean, I think a few things you cannot suddenly wish away, right?
Now, so does it really require the kind of money that, you know, founders are raising?
No, I think, look...
Is it just about, say, Tarun coming in and he's put $1 million as part of a seed round, and then after that he just has to keep raising money to get, you know, show some returns on paper? I mean...
No, I don't think it's that. I mean, Tarun can answer that. But see, look, I think there are a few... There are many layers of your question. So let's go step by step. One is, a lot of capital was invested. What can we show for it? That's part of your question. Now, look, I think this is very market to market, startup to startup specific. If you look at some of the large platform plays, which are high frequency, e-commerce, taxi, food delivery, payments, all these things, I think we have large scale companies. Of course, there's profitability challenges, but that's a function of competitiveness. Okay? Indian consumer has adopted internet as a way of life in a big way. And you're seeing, who would have thought there would be 70 million food deliveries in India on a monthly basis? No one. If someone woke me up in 2015 in the middle of the night and said, bro, ye hoga, I would be like, man, give me what you're
saying. But I don't know how you're sidelining the profitability issue. I mean, that is the big issue.
No. Profitability is a function of competition, right? Now, what happens is, there are two ways competition gets solved. Either both sides, if there are two players who are competing like crazy, either both of them realize that, look, there's no end to this and we'll keep burning, and they consolidate either directly, or they rationalize and investors stop putting more capital. Now, there's no way to predict when that stops, okay? And one reason why more capital keeps coming in is if people see that the 70 million food orders, for example, let's take food delivery, 70 million is probably going to go to 300, 400, 500. If some people have that line of sight, they'll keep investing with that conviction. And so...
With 50 million burn per month.
Yeah, something like that.
That's amazing math.
Look, I think there are cases where this all looks crazy from the outside. And it even might be crazy. But... You know, there are people who are running these companies. Some of them are my good friends. And I think they obviously they are very worried about this scale of the risk and stuff like that. But I think there is real depth in the market, right? There's like Zomato yesterday announced they're in 250 cities. Swiggy is in some 175 cities or 200 cities. The addressable market for a lot of these services is actually very large. I'll give you another data point closer to home. For Ghana, right? Ghana has 100 million streaming users on a monthly basis. This is not something we had put in our optimistic plan. Okay? I think the market surprised at how fast it's moved. So I think there's depth. And sometimes what happens is you end up investing a bit ahead of the realization. But that's the nature of optimism, right? You end up being more optimistic and then it slowly catches up. Hopefully you've not set up your fixed cost to be so high that you can't survive through the winter of not having more capital. That's first part of your question. Second part of your question, I don't think any investors have caused any damage, if you ask me, right? I think that India is just a competitive market. It's an open market. Anybody can enter. And so what ends up happening is that companies take a longer period of time to get to profitability. Now, that's a current state of the market. I don't think you can wish that away. So, you know, when we look at companies, we are generally conservative. We don't go into high burn companies because we know that we can't keep backing that. And we don't want to take a risk where it's a very binary outcome of whether you get this one guy or not. If you don't get him, you're dead, and if you get him, you sail through, right? And so that's at least our perhaps slightly conservative approach.
Tarun, you want to come in because you've seen a bunch of these consumer internet companies scale. Does size and scale really convert into you making money? I mean, we saw that with the Uber IPO. I mean, there've been just so many questions raised, and there's so much skepticism, scrutiny. I think it was like a flagship for the consumer internet wave.
Let me answer the question more broadly, and I think I wish there was a black and white answer to what you're saying. And the reality is, it's a complex sort of, you know, multiple layers that one needs to look at. So one is, I think we have to understand at a macro level, I agree completely with what Mithin said, is that there India is a market and people do increasingly view India as the last large remaining open
frontier
internet
market.
Tech market that is potentially going to give venture scale returns. And so I think there is more enthusiasm than there is reality on the ground right now. And that results in hyper competition. So number one, and I think that's something we all have to accept and sort of bake into the way we think about starting companies, the way we think about investing in companies, number one. Number two, within this, I think there is the whole GDP per capita point. It's increasing and it's something which we all are very bullish about in the next decade. It's not there yet. And I think the smartest founders and the smartest investors are factoring that into the way they are thinking and advising their portfolio companies in terms of how to scale. Okay. Not everybody is doing it, but some of them have access to unlimited amounts of capital for a very long period of time, or at least they think they have access to unlimited amounts of capital, and so they're playing the game that way. Now, it's hard for, like I said, a lot of these are very nuanced things when, you know, in terms of how much people are willing to play that game.
No, so is that why someone like Tiger, because we started our conversation with Tiger, they saw that entire cycle, and I know for a fact that, you know, they did in some way get lucky with Flipkart. It was an outcome which happened. It's great, but I don't know if there's another Flipkart happening to any of the other consumer internet companies anytime soon in India. And therefore, they've taken this very sort of educated call on doing more on SaaS and B2B, where capital is not your biggest moat. Maybe it will after Tiger's entered the space, for
unlikely,
all you know,
because
but, yeah.
Generally enterprise companies, you know, yeah, don't need as much capital.
So why would a Tiger take that call, which is like a flag bearer in terms of consumer internet? They spotted it much before anyone else did. Are we seeing the plateauing of the consumer internet space in terms of opportunity also, because it just sucks too much capital at the end of the day?
I don't think so at all. I think we're putting too much weight on one fund and firm's.
No, it's not about thesis. A fund, Mithin. I mean, you can pull out data and you'll know, right? Flipkart 10 years down the line is
I'm not talking about the value creation. So what I'm talking about is
we're talking about the venture opportunity. So we have to talk about value creation, right?
I agree with you. See, what will happen is now you got to think about venture opportunity now differently, given there's new underlying infrastructure in India today as compared to where underlying infrastructure was 5 years ago.
Sure.
5 years ago, you couldn't ship a product easily to 26,000 zip codes in India.
Mm.
Now you can. What does that do to a new age coffee brand? Right? You could build a new age coffee brand which could become the next, you know, Luckin Coffee, for example. Now because there's infrastructure, there's payments, there's XYZ. So what happens at every point in time, let me ask you a question. Is the US consumer market fully tapped out because it's a $20 trillion market? Not at all, right? Innovation cycles happen based on different baseline infrastructure. And today now India looks very different than it did 5 years ago. So I think the India consumer story is nowhere close to done. It's a very exciting stage. In fact, now the kinds of things you can do, you couldn't do 5 years ago. Now the question is, what will be that massive scale company? It's tough to predict. Maybe some of us have them in our portfolios and we can share. But it's tough to predict, you know, in a very general manner where that.
Even if you look at the US, and both of you would have, sort of a macro view on what's happening there, we haven't really seen after the vintage of Airbnb, Uber, some big consumer internet breakout story. I mean, everyone is skeptical about the consumer internet. I mean, even in China, for that matter, look at what's happening with Didi.
China, you saw different things happening. I mean, China's a very, again, innovative, competitive market, but you saw different types of commerce happen. You've seen different types of social media happen. What explains TikTok, right? TikTok is a new kind of social media, and nobody expected it. It's come from nowhere. It's a global phenomenon now. I think these are, again, silver bullets, which I don't think exist. I think what, as an investor, at least the way I would look at it is, look, is there a underlying sort of large market opportunity that a team is going after uniquely? And with current or potential future infrastructure, will this become large? Let me go back to the previous point I was making. I think there are 3-4 areas in India where you could now have large companies. One, I think, is gaming. Okay. Now you have 200, 250 million active monthly gamers. It's a big enough platform. If somebody gets to 20, 30%, 40% market share, could they have a meaningfully large company? I think so. I think education is another one where you'll see a lot of change. I think there are, again, a few underlying changes that are happening in education or models of education. I think Tarun has an interesting company. I mean, Matrix has an interesting company that Tarun can talk about in that space, where, you know, it's a different financing model for education. How does that change things? Also, India, I think overall, is massively underpenetrated when it comes to credit. I think that's, again, a very large platform opportunity in India. To think about the number of people who have smartphones are somewhat linked with Aadhaar or some other kind of authentication, KYC, and now you can build a new product on top. So these are large platform opportunities, I think, which are all B2C potentially.
Tarun, you want to jump in and talk a bit about Reliance. It was seen as with Jio to facilitate a lot of the adoption in terms of data. How do you look at Jio now as a company which is or Reliance at large? Actually getting into the space which was largely dominated by the big internet companies. So from being a facilitator to actually being a competitor.
I think you have to take the good with the bad. All of us are in many ways, we have to thank Jio for what they've done. I think what they did is, in my mind, they accelerated what a lot of us thought would take 5 years. They brought that down to 18 months. And they executed this at scale. They've crashed data cost by 95%. They've increased user base by 6x in the last 2-3 years. They've average consumption. I was just reading a report which was really interesting. Average consumption of a Jio user today is 20 gigabytes a month. It's hard to believe that 18 months ago the average consumption on some of the rival networks was 500 megabytes a month. Mm-hmm. Right, so these people are using like 40 times the amount of data they were using just 2 years ago. Right, and that's essentially the power of what they've done. Now, has it opened massive new business models? I don't think TikTok would have been there without that. I mean, the whole market, context was completely different, right? And a lot of our companies have seen, like, you know, what we keep talking about, what is the new normal, right? Mm-hmm. So there was a time I used to meet a company, and if they were doing 25, 30, 40 lakhs a month, you were like, okay, you know, they seem to have cracked something. 6 months ago, that number was, if they've hit like a crore and a half, okay, they've hit upon something that's interesting. Today, companies hit 2 crores a month like this, yeah. Right? And so what they've done is they've changed, in my mind, what the new normal is. And we, as VCs, need to keep sort of reinventing ourselves to understand what is a new normal, such that, because anyone, once you start, can get to that very quickly as a result of it. Now, coming to what it means as a potential competitor, as a potential both to sort of companies and as an investor, I think the reality is they've built the pipe. They aren't monetizing the pipe very richly. We all know that. Mm-hmm. And they're going to find ways to monetize it. And I think there will be some spaces where Reliance as a group will have natural synergies with their sort of downstream businesses or upstream businesses, Whether that's entertainment, whether that's content, whether that's commerce, especially B2B, given sort of some of the backend infrastructure. I think you have to bake that in. It's the same way today, if I'm starting an e-commerce company, I'm asking myself, okay, what can I do which is in a niche enough that an Amazon or a Flipkart won't come and sort of eat me for lunch? I'm going to start thinking the same way about Jio. And I think that's the new normal that founders and investors will need to think of, because till now investors used to ask this question, well, what if Google gets into your space? We're actually asking this question, well, what if Jio does this?
Mithin?
Well, I think Jio is a phenomenal company. I think combination of what they've executed, all the things that I think Tarun already said. But I think there are two attributes which I think of them very highly on. One is the scale of the ambition. I think they are massively ambitious company. I think they've proven this time and time again as Reliance. They've got big appetite, and they're able to invest behind that big appetite. And then secondly, they're actually very innovative for the size and scale of company. They do have an imagination which is quite up to date and quite futuristic. I think they're a formidable competitor. Somebody we look up to as a company to take very seriously.
I think some of the biggest impact in my mind, and again, just taking a little bit of a zoomed out view, I think a part of the reason why people were building copycat companies till maybe a year ago was we were building for the 100 million California Indians, right? I think what Jio has changed and what we will hopefully realize or see in the next 3 to 4 years is it's actually opened up opportunities for the next 500 million real sort of Indian internet users. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those companies aren't large enough today, and so it's, you know, it's hard for people to see. But I think if we were to look back 3 years from now, I think the biggest impact would be that because we've given that sort of mobile data-enabled phone to literally everybody across some of the smallest villages and towns in this country, and you see their internet behavior and their usage behavior. I mean, today we're you know, some of us are, you know, we're investors in a small e-commerce company, and the kind of stuff that they're seeing in literally tier two, tier three towns.
And are you seeing transactions as well happen on these?
We are seeing transaction ramp up happen faster than what the first generation of e-commerce companies did and continue to do in those cities, even today.
I think because there's always been skepticism about whether these consumers would be able to.
I think it's a fallacy that these people are going to be the non-transacting users. Yes, the economics of that order you need to fix. The transaction size is not going to be the 1500 rupee AOV that a Flipkart or Amazon will see. It's going to be a 300 or 400 rupee product. Now the question is, can you architect your business model that will make it work at the 300-400
sustain at that point and make profit? Right?
If you can, I think there's it's the proverbial sort of, you know, whatever at the bottom of the pyramid. So I think there is definitely a lot that we can do. And like I said, these are transacting users. We can see these people that are literally captured 5 to 6% of households in tier 2, tier 3 towns. I don't think any e-commerce company has captured 5 or 6% of households in a given city.
Now tell us what it is.
I think I know the name.
Look, I think just look, baseline reconfiguration has to keep happening. Market's very different, very exciting.
Yeah, but for all the optimism, I think, you know, if I were a VC, I would think, how do you kind of you know, there's always something new in India which comes to threaten you as a startup. I remember 4 years back, the conversation was Ola versus Uber, Amazon versus Flipkart. After a couple of years, it's become, Reliance has got its tentacles everywhere. My fear is that they may be the ones to get a foothold in this sort of, you know, beyond 100 million user base quicker than a startup. And I mean, they have a lot of things going for them, right? On the regulatory front, these big companies, I think, are somewhere not read very well by even venture investors and a lot of founders. So I think it's very critical that yeah. they don't get a foot in the door. And like you said, I mean, they have access to all the data.
Look, I think all that said, there's one thing I will say about the Indian customer, consumer, is that the Indian consumer always chooses the relatively best product.
Not led by discounts and cashbacks.
That does happen, but ultimately, you know, that alone doesn't sustain. Your product has to catch up with it. You have to keep delivering. And so I think that while there are, you know, some inherent advantages,
Mithin, you can
many of us
spell
have.
Some skepticism. Come on.
No, I'm not. I'm
come on.
Okay.
Do it.
You need some optimism, right, around the room also.
No, look, so I'll tell you where I'm skeptical, okay? Where I'm skeptical is exits, okay?
Where are the exits,
right? Yeah. And so where is your outcomes going to come from? And those I'm genuinely very worried about because of the fact that, again, per capita GDP is not multiplying overnight, right? Like, these things are changing very slowly. And so a number of cases where you've got high burn, you're seeing companies look at adjacent business models. And when I start to see that happen too much, I think I get worried.
I'm going to round it up.
I think we're sort of out of time. I just want your quick views on, you know, the fact that a lot of the U.S. internet companies went IPO in the last 4 months. Mm-hmm. There is a view, there's a contra view that it's also happened because they knew that the public market was the way to go for them because private money would not be able to sustain the kind of burn, etc. And most of them were loss-making companies. How is the next 1 year or so going to pan out, considering, you know, the competitive landscape in India is also very different now? How do you sort of see it for early stage companies? I mean, is there a lot of money still? Would, you know, factors like which we've spoken about, revenue, market share, losses, etc., start to play up far more as we go along?
See, the amount of money that will come into the early stage market is a function of how much early stage money there is in the funds who've raised the money, right? So if you look at the market right now, Matrix has raised a fund about six months or a year ago. Sequoia has done that. Lightspeed has done that. Excel has done that. You know, or there's a bunch of money sitting on the sidelines.
Yeah.
Now, so I think a lot of that will get deployed. I don't think the US IPO market will affect this at all. I think if there are interesting companies, people will find them, they'll invest. I think the bigger impact that the IPO market will have is the amount of growth money a lot of companies will get. What will happen is they'll say, look, we all thought that we can just burn our way and ultimately get to profitability. Guess what? That story didn't play out in so many cases. And the public market is very harsh. I mean, you saw, I was actually watching the Uber IPO live, and I was worried for a moment that this thing will not list. There was a moment I thought, oh my God, this may not list.
No, because I remember in 2014 or 13 when Alibaba went IPO, the massive chunk of money came after that, right? In India was the big beneficiary, which is not at all is the sentiment right now.
I think the sentiment is going to change. And my sense is that Uber, and largely Uber, but also by another companies, a lot of companies were built in the grow at all costs.
Yes.
You know, focus only on market share and, you know, without looking at the burn line. I think there is definitely going to be a difference in the way in which people will start thinking about it. I think today, like I said, right, depending on cost of capital, people look at growth versus profitability very differently. Uber was built in an era of zero cost of capital, right, where your next best alternative was really nothing. And so you had to look at ways in which my sense is those days are not over, but I think people are going to be a lot more pragmatic about building companies in a way where eventually they can get to profitability with a reasonable amount of time. Also, I think, and we tell this to our founders every day, that listen, it's fine to burn as long as you know what are the levers to turn when you eventually need to get to profitability. I don't think some of these companies have figured out what those levers are yet, and that's very dangerous, right? So if you are able to, if today I had a choice as an entrepreneur that grow 100% and burn X versus grow 60% but don't burn money. The challenge is I don't think the second option exists for most of these companies. They actually don't know which is the part which is worrying, right? But for some companies, I think that option is available. And I think those are the companies that will eventually get significantly much more value over the next few years. And so people will reward that.
But that's all growth stage. No,
that's all growth stage.
Yeah, but so what is the exit? What are the kind of exits that?
So I'm a little bit more. I'm a little bit more optimistic there, and you know, as we always are. The reality is that listen, if you look back again, we have to understand it. The India venture ecosystem is all of 10 years old, give or take. And out of the first 10 years, you know, first 5 years, we didn't have any internet users, so to speak, right? Or we had very few internet users. So it's still a very, very nascent ecosystem. My bet and my view is that the next decade is the decade where there will be significant, a lot of these questions will get answered. Listen, let's take a step back, right? 18 months ago, there was a question of will Flipkart survive? There was a question of will Ola survive? There were multiple questions. Will Indian entrepreneurs win? Will global companies come and eat your lunch? Will an Alibaba or whatever come and, you know, basically destroy you? None of that has happened.
My only question is, Arun, that these outcomes are smaller than what you would have thought or...
Which outcome is smaller? They're much larger than the ones that I thought. I mean, like, if you look at Flipkart, $20 billion, how many of us really genuinely thought that it would...
I think that is an exception. There was Walmart, which was looking to come in. This was the only thing it could buy.
You can't take away from the success, right? The data is there.
I'm saying, what is the valuation of Ola at this time? Like, I mean, we're not... What is the actual valuation of that company, which...
There's a smart private investor that has looked at
what
all the data, that has done all the diligence,
like,
and
Ola
has basically looked and said, well, here is the value I ascribe. Now, listen, it's a point of view, and it's like I said, as long as it's not public, we can always keep debating it, right? And even with Flipkart, you remember there was a time where every day there was some mutual fund that was mopping it up, mopping it down.
Paytm, you take away the cashbacks, that company is valued at whatever, 14 billion, 15, whatever. I mean, it's anyone's guess. What's the value if you take away the cashbacks? Look at the revenues. I don't know if still there is a model which will get them to a place where they can make money. It's still work in progress.
I think they've solved a very basic use case, which has made frictionless payments in this country possible. With UPI, obviously, some of that advantage has gone away. my sense is they're trying multiple things now. I think all of us agree that there is a business model search that needs to, you know, conclude at some point, right? Mm-hmm. I think the day they do that, the valuation will be justified. If not, it's going to be hard.
So exit for a company of that sort, which has got to a valuation, which is say 15 billion, is what in India?
Either some massive trade sale happens or they have to go public. I would actually plan for the latter, and then because the first one you can't plan for. That's hope.
So are IPOs in the pipeline?
I will tell you my point of view there. And like I said, I'm a little bit more optimistic, at least given some of the companies that we're seeing. Listen, and again, let's go back, right? This is it's a nascent market. If I take a look at, you know, Indian tech companies till 2 or 3 years ago, you could not even count a handful of companies that had $80 to $100 million in revenue, right? If I take typical NASDAQ, this thing, $80 to $100 million in revenue, growing 50 to 70%, 80% year on year, that's typically the scale that is required for IPO, right? How many Indian companies could we name 3 years ago that had $80 to $100 million in revenue? Literally a handful, right? Today, I think I can count maybe a dozen, maybe two dozen companies that are in the either on track to get there this year or already there and have exceeded that this year, right? Some of them are burning more money than should be, but there are others that are not burning. And I gave some of the names that when we spoke. I think this is the first, and if I take last year, while Flipkart was the biggest news of the year, the reality is that there were another half a dozen to 10, you know, maybe 8-10 companies that actually there was significant liquidity generated for venture investors, mostly through strategic or secondary exits that happened, right? My sense is that this is the first time where VCs are actually have the option to decide whether they want to hold or not, right? We've had that in some companies. You know, Mithin's had that in some of his companies. A lot of investors have that. Now, I think to me, that is where the maturation of the ecosystems are showing up, where you actually have a, you know, call where you're exercising saying, should I sell, you know, X stake in this company or should I hold for more compounding? Mm-hmm. Earlier, the exit used to be like, you know, it almost was like never a choice, right? Okay, when it happens, you just take it because you don't know when the next window will come. Today, I think there is a lot of people actually have choice in some of the quality companies. And so my view is it only gets better from here in the next 10 to, you know, whatever, 5 to 10, in the next decade should be better. But I echo your word of caution that there is too much capital happening. There's in some of the sectors, there's been overcapitalization. And unfortunately, even at very large scales, companies haven't really figured out a sustainable business model. And I think that's something that, you know, it needs to be solved if you know, we aren't to have too many of these sort of over enthusiasm blow ups.
Cool. All right, thank you so much, gentlemen. It was a great chat. Hopefully we can do more of such no holds bar, where Mithin is slightly more skeptical. thank you so much guys.
Really appreciate your coming.
Thank you for listening, and you can find the transcribed version of this podcast on matrixpartners.in. You can also follow us on Twitter and LinkedIn for more updates.